broadcast out of New York City. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, June 18th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on drsaputo.com and prn.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a great show for you today that's going to include the FDA's up to it again. Are they going to shift some of our prescription drugs over the counter so they can sell more of them?
And the epigenetics of breast cancer. What increases the risk?
And now another side effect of statins. Can you believe it? Fatigue.
And we have much, much more for you today.
So if you want to join us in our conversation, you have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
You know, I was thinking about how medications kill more than 4,000 people every year.
You mean 400,000?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's maybe 4,000 a day.
I thought I said that, but anyway, yeah. Can you imagine how many people that is? I was just trying to think about how many people live in our city, and there's only about 17,000 in our city.
Well, we're in a sleepy little town. That's right.
But anyway, 400,000 people is an awful lot of people, and everybody got rightfully upset with 9/11, and that killed less than 3,000 people. So why aren't people getting more upset about all the deaths from medications?
Well, we kind of depend on medicines because we think that way. We watch these direct-to-consumer ads, and we go to our doctors, and we read the medical literature, and they're all talking about this drug does this, and that one does that, and they'll tell you some of the time about what the side effects are. I mean, if you listen to the direct-to-consumer ads and you still buy the drug, you got to wonder what you're doing because the side effects are so impressive.
Well, yet the new FDA proposal is to advocate prescription drugs without prescriptions. And the main meds that they're talking about are meds for, like, chronic diseases such as asthma and migraine headaches and hypertension and high cholesterol to be available over the counter.
Sure. Just go to your little kiosk at the pharmacy.
And you click on the answers, and out pop your medicines like a vending machine, all without seeing a doctor.
Oh, how convenient.
So what's the advantage of this?
Yeah, well, you're right.
Well, money for the pharmaceutical companies, for one thing.
Well, they'd sell a lot more drugs because, you know, a lot of people can't afford health care. They don't have health insurance. They can't pay for the bills themselves. When you look at 50% of America is underinsured or not insured, you can imagine what the sale of drugs would be, and you could also imagine.
Most people, the insurance will cover their medications.
I know, but if you don't have insurance, you're in that half that doesn't have it.
Then you're in trouble.
Then you're going to have to pay for it yourself. It'd probably be somewhat cheaper too that way, but at least you cut out the expenses of seeing the doctor. So is that
is this safe, though?
Well, obviously. Well, it's not, but, you know, a lot of this is political. I mean, what drugs are prescription today are likely to be over the counter tomorrow, and that's largely because when the patents run out, anybody can make the drug, and what happens is they come out over the counter, they lower the price so it's competitive, and because everybody knows the trade name of the drug, they're apt to just buy it. So, I mean, if you were on, say, Mevacor for your cholesterol and somebody said, buy lovastatin, they wouldn't know what it was. But when they saw the name Mevacor, they'd probably say, oh, yeah, that's for cholesterol. So it's how it's presented. And, of course, it's all about money and about sales. And that's what this whole topic is really about.
Well, drugs aren't safe with or without a prescription.
Well, that's right. And we should be looking for natural ways to approach problems. I mean, we talk about the statins all the time and how many people think the statins are absolutely the thing that they should be doing if their cholesterol is high. And I can't tell you, I have a couple of patients maybe who are on statins out of all the people that come to see me because I think that there are such better ways to deal with it than deal with lifestyle. If you can do something yourself, why in the world do you ever do something that has a whole list of side effects to it, some of which can be lethal? It just doesn't make any sense. And yet we get in our lazy ways of relying on the brainwashing that the pharmaceutical company does to convince you that you need that drug. that the average person over the age of 65 is taking four or five drugs. I mean, talk about good advertising. That's stellar advertising. Because now they just sell a lot of their products because we hear it over and over. Everybody thinks it's a great idea because that's what their neighbor is doing. And so without thinking, you just do it because you figure that that's the only way to do it.
And many people don't want to take generics either because the name doesn't jump out at them like the newer drugs.
Exactly. And
they think because they're cheaper, they're not as good. I've heard people say that.
Well, they're identical. It's interesting that the only reason you have generic drugs is because a trade name drug has lost its patent, and now you can buy it either by prescription at a much lower price, or sometimes even over the counter. That was particularly the case with a lot of antihistamines that are prescription for their 15 or so years that they're on patent, and then as soon as they go off patent, you see them in the drugstore. And, of course, everybody then just buys them themselves. Well, why are they prescription to start with? You have to ask yourself that question. And it's all about the political side of the economics that are involved. So there are strategists that work for pharmaceutical companies that have made this a tremendous art of knowing what to do when it comes to the sale of drugs. And believe me, it's about the sale of drugs. That is the bottom line.
And when there's a new one, they're so pumped up like, oh, this is better because it's new. But, you know, the new ones were really just guinea pigs because at least the older ones have been around longer
right.
to know how bad they are.
Yeah, well, that's why so many drugs finally are taken off the market. Look at the case of Darvon, which was a pain medicine that was was being sold.
And everybody thought it was better because it wasn't a narcotic.
Yeah, and so for 50 years, we're all buying it. And then suddenly, about a year ago, a study comes out and says, hey, you know, this thing causes a lot of cardiac rhythm disturbances. We should take it off the market. And so they're, yeah, we'll take it off the market. So they did. Now, maybe there was a ploy in that so that if Darvon wasn't available and it's off patent for a long time.
People are taking nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs?
They'll buy other drugs that are on patent. Okay, so maybe that had something to do with the pharmaceutical company that makes Darvon. You ever thought of that?
Oh, no.
Take one off, put another one on. The one that's the cheap one you want to get rid of, and the one that you're going to make a fortune on if Darvon's not available is the one that you want to put up. Isn't that an interesting theory?
Well, just like, too, for a long time, everybody's thought, well, Tylenol is safe, you know, because aspirin can make you bleed, and the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs have all these terrible side effects that we're finding out more and more all the time, besides bleeding and so forth. You can get heart attacks and strokes, and
right.
so take Tylenol, you know. That just is unhealthy for your liver a little bit, but now we found out that Tylenol does other things.
Yeah, like cause bleeding, too. So you think that Tylenol is safer because it doesn't cause bleeding, but if you take it in the full doses, it does cause bleeding.
And a lot of times people end up with more Tylenol than they're even aware of because it's put into other things, like it's in their headache medicine and it might be thrown into their cold medicine.
Exactly.
And then it's in the Excedrin and all these other things, and maybe some of it's in your cough medicine, and
that's right.
Pretty soon you're overdosing on it and you don't even know it.
I'll tell you, if you want
acetaminophen, that's the name for
it. If you want to OD on something, pick something else. Tylenol is the most miserable death. Because what it causes is a liver failure that if you take just as much as 15 grams of the stuff, which is not that much, your liver...
How many pills would that be, do you
think? It depends on their size. But if you figure they're, say, 500 milligrams a pill, which is a rough way to say it, that'd be 30 pills. You will die over a period of time that is a few weeks or maybe longer. You may need a liver transplant. Or you may not be able to get one. And then you're going to suffer, so find another way to do it.
30 pills in how long of a period of time?
Just in one day.
Well, who would take 30 pills?
Somebody wants to commit suicide.
So in other words, it's a miserable way to commit suicide.
It's a miserable way to commit suicide.
You don't want to pick that.
No, you don't want to do that. Pick something else. It's less of a miserable thing. So this whole thing about of relying on medicines for anything is wonderful to have as a backup. But it's not the thing that you want to have if you're looking at the primary way you want to deal with something. I'm always talking about how do you decide what to do when you have a health problem. And I think there's always an order that I follow, even in the most serious illnesses. And it starts with lifestyle. You know, we don't realize how powerful a medicine lifestyle is. It is far more impressive than any medicine that's ever been made for almost any condition. It's just amazing at how powerful that is. You want to boost your testosterone levels and your growth hormone levels and do anti-aging medicine? Exercise. Nothing comes close. You want to do something about depression, even though an article came out this last week that said that's not true? There are many, many others that have been out that show it's a powerful way to treat depression, as effective as taking the antidepressants that everybody's taken. So you want to do lifestyle first. If that doesn't work, then start looking at non-invasive therapies, you know, things like Chinese medicine or chiropractic or Ayurveda or Native American medicine, et cetera, et cetera. And do that because they're less likely to cause a problem. And if that doesn't work, then you get a little more aggressive. Okay, use a supplement of some kind or a vitamin pill or some other nutrient that you can get to try and change your cellular biochemistry. And if you do all that, chances are you're going to have a good start. But if that doesn't work, then you start thinking about using things like the drugs, you know, the pharmaceutical drugs, which kill 400,000 people a year. Now you're looking at a huge change in what happens that we have to really take note of. Then finally, then you start looking at surgery and some of the advanced technologies and some of the research protocols that are out there. That's the order we should follow.
You know, the other thing, too, I just want to go back for a second. We were talking about the Tylenol.
Mm-hmm.
We were just joking about pick something else besides Tylenol if you want to commit suicide. I mean, if you're having suicidal, if you're having suicidal thoughts, obviously you need to get help. And we're just joking. We're not telling you to pick some other way to do it. I mean, we want to keep you around.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, sometimes, yeah, our jokes aren't so funny. That's right. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputi here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
What increases the risk of breast cancer besides environmental risks and postmenopausal HRT that can be avoided? Well, the Archives of Internal Medicine published a report that was by the Institute of Medicine showing that radiation exposure like x-rays and CT scans and PET scans definitely increase the risk. Now, I don't know why this is such hot news because we've known for a long time that radiation increases the risk of cancer. But I think maybe it's because we have so many of these tests that are happening more and more all the time. Everybody's going and getting CTs and PET scans, and the doctors are trying to cover themselves, you know, to protect themselves from lawsuits and so forth. And I think that mammograms aren't emphasized enough about the radiation that people get from mammograms. I mean, if you listen to us, you've heard that before because it's pretty concentrated radiation right on the breast. But
You're getting essentially the radiation that's in a chest x-ray and a mammogram, but instead of being over the whole chest, it's over just the breast, so it's concentrated a little more. And keep in mind, you have to do 1,800 mammograms to have any benefit to work on that. And so we don't really want to be thinking about causing breast cancer. And if you have 1,000 or 1,200 mammograms, you're going to cause one cancer. So you may save one person if you do 1,800, but you're going to cause two cancers.
So what should a woman know if she wants to avoid some of these serious risks of radiation, like if a doctor wants her to get a test, you know?
Well,
I guess she needs to ask if it's really necessary, first of all.
Well, that's true. You know, doctors tend to focus more on finding the answer that they have for the question about what's gone wrong. And I understand wanting to do that because it makes a lot of sense to know what you're dealing with. But you don't want to do it at the risk of causing a problem such as a cancer. And so we should be thinking twice about our workups and asking the question, will it make a difference that is really important if we do something like a CT scan?
Well, another thing that happens is frequently when somebody has cancer, the doctors want to follow it and see if it's progressing or if it's getting better or what have you. And so they're doing these tests, which can be causing another kind of a cancer.
Well, that's right. And I understand the reason for doing it, because you want to start the treatment that you have for that cancer as soon as you can, so it doesn't get further out of hand than it already is. But you still have to think twice about what are you doing with your diagnostic technologies. I mean, if you're making the cancer worse or making it more likely to be a big issue because you caused another cancer from it, that's really a big deal.
So some of the other questions that people need to ask their doctors when they suggest some of these tests that have a lot of radiation, like the CT and the PETs and the X-rays, mammograms, is if there's alternatives or if the test is going to change the management of their disease.
That's really, those are good questions.
Or if it's okay to wait.
Well, that's really right, and I think those are really valid questions. I think the medical legal risks scare a lot of doctors. You know, somebody comes into the emergency room, they fall and they've hit their head, maybe they're unconscious for a few seconds or a minute or two or whatever, and the first thing they're thinking of is better do a CT scan of the head and make sure there's not a epidural or a subdural hematoma or a fracture or some problem that's going to be an issue. And yet before we had CT scans, we managed people quite well, and on occasion, yes, we'd miss somebody. And there might be a disaster from that because we just didn't have that technology. But today, you go to the emergency room, you don't get a CT scan for a head trauma of some kind. That would be unusual. And the problem is that we're using way too many CT scans, and we're giving lots of radiation to people, and we're increasing the cost of care. But look at it this way. What if the doctor doesn't do a CT scan? And they don't follow all the directions that you give for how to follow for a head injury, you know, through the night or for a couple of days. What do you think is going to happen if it turns out there was a problem and that doctor didn't do a CT scan? He's going to be sued, or she's going to be sued.
Well, the other thing, too, like you're talking about in the ER, a patient's not in a real strong position in the emergency room to start asking the doctor all these questions, you know, because they're in an emergency,
well,
you know,
right,
to ask about if there's another choice of a test. But what about some of these other tests, like ultrasounds and MRIs and mammotherms? Maybe we can talk about some of those things after my first 2020 tip.
That sounds like a good idea. So you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health or you want to join in our conversation, give us a call. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Confucius say.
Uh-oh, here we go. Brace yourself.
Listen carefully to get your laughs important for good health. Okay, Confucius did not say, man who wants pretty nurse must be patient.
Oh, jeez.
Passionate kiss like spider web leads to undoing of fly.
You're getting pretty spicy, Vicki.
Lady who goes camping must beware of evil intent.
Intent. Oh, God.
Squirrel who runs up woman's leg will not find nuts.
Oh, my God. Well, that depends, Vicki. But okay, go on.
Man who leaps off cliff jumps to conclusion.
Oh, no.
Man who runs in front of car gets tired.
Oh, he's tired.
Man who runs behind car gets exhausted.
Oh, jeez. This Confucius is degenerated into something here, Vicki.
Man who eats many prunes gets good run for money.
Oh, jeez. That should be a sign on a nursing home wall.
I remember one time I did an ad for prunes.
Yes,
I was jogging, and they gave me a poster of it. My son hung it up in the bathroom, and he wrote a note on it that said, nothing like running with the runs.
That's right.
War does not determine who is right. It determines who is left.
Indeed.
Man who fight with wife all day get no peace at night.
Oh, Vicki. That's terrible.
Man who drives like hell is bound to get there.
That's true, too.
Man who stands on toilet. Man who stands on toilet. He's high on pot.
Oh, Vicki.
No, I'm going to have a healthy day today.
That's
man who live in glass house should change clothesment.
Indeed.
Man who fish another man's well.
Oh, no. Don't even do this one.
Often catch crabs.
Oh, Vicki. This is a medical talk show.
Okay,
huh?
And after that big golf tournament yesterday.
Uh-huh.
A lion will not cheat on his wife, but Tiger would.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez. Well, I feel a little better already.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Indeed. Now let's see if we can focus something serious.
Okay, I was talking about other options to radiation and CT and PET scans and all that.
Uh-huh.
So what about the ultrasound and the MRIs and the mammotherm?
Well, see, there's kind of an urgency to find out sometimes. And you want to do what you can that will give you the best answer. And usually it's doing something that is giving some kind of radiation. Although I have to say the MRIs don't have radiation. We tend to use those a little bit more often. And that's good, because what happens is we can deal with that, and we can find out the answer, but it's expensive, and so you can't do all the things that you'd like to do that way.
So maybe that's a good thing, though, to ask your doctor.
Well, I would, yeah.
Would an MRI be okay to do instead?
Or maybe, like you said, an ultrasound. And in the case of mammograms, in my opinion, okay, my arrogant opinion, I should say it that way, I think the mammogram under the age of 50 is malpractice as a routine screening test, because that exposure is a very bad idea. And what we because it's causing all this radiation, and what we should be doing is breast thermography,
especially in women under 50.
Absolutely, there's great data on that. If you want information about that, go to drsaputo.com and put in breast thermography, and you'll see a lot of information that will convince you. Okay, and this is all from the mainstream medical journals. This is not stuff from throwaway journals or from people who are just giving editorial opinions. This is hard data that was done over the last 20 to 30 years that's good stuff. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from John from New Jersey. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Saputo. Thank you. I have called in before, and I just want to let you know I listen to the show regular, and it's a lot of information for a layperson, but it's great. I enjoy learning.
Well, that's great. Thanks for joining us. Let your friends know, John. We can use all the people out to get this information as possible, because we'd like to cause an evolution where we're going from disease care to health care. Anyway,
absolutely.
What's your question?
Thank you, yes. Okay, I have a tear in my Achilles tendon.
Okay.
Okay, it's not ruptured, but I guess it's more of a vertical, it's like fibrous tear.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm wearing a boot. My orthopedic surgeon is conservative, thankfully. He's not saying let's do surgery.
That's
good. He gave me a boot to wear at night, which stretches it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was feeling all right. And yesterday I went to the Mets game yesterday and walked up and down those stairs, and I was in a lot, you know, I could feel it a lot today.
Yeah, sure.
So my question is, I guess, I know you've talked about light therapy, so I guess I'm just looking for any alternative to surgery, and any thoughts you have about what could be done.
Okay, well, certainly light therapy is a great thing to do. The photonic stimulator is a beautiful way to treat this. You need enough power in the device that you have, so you want to be sure you have that. I would find somebody who does infrared light therapy locally if you can, and then I would do that daily. Otherwise, you could actually buy a machine yourself. There are lots of places online. They tend to cost at least a few $100s. That's the problem. But if you go to a doctor for 2 weeks and do daily light therapy, you'll spend way more than that on your own.
Right.
So that would be something you could do.
Could you tell me specifically what I would look for? What machine?
Well, I can't really. The machines I use are all experimental, and you can't buy them. And they're the ones that I use. The Thor company makes some really good stuff, but you can spend a lot. That's THOR. It costs a lot of money to buy most of their products. There is one that's made by a fellow named Matt DeBow, D-E-B-O-W, that is reasonably powerful. It only costs a couple of $100s. And if you want more information about that, email me at Dr. Len, D-R-L-E-N, at drsaputo.com. And I will put you in touch with Matt, and maybe you could purchase one yourself through him. He's a really good guy, knows a lot about infrared light therapy, and is selling these things at a pretty decent price. It's for about $200.
Okay.
So we often will work with him to do that because I think it's a good product. There are other things you could do, too. You can put DMSO on it. Sometimes that'll help. You can put ice on it, particularly after you've exercised. Physical therapy is real important. Acupuncture can help. You can go to your chiropractor. They can adjust these things. Sometimes that helps. And the combination of treatments often will do it, but it can get expensive, too. I mean, if you don't have health insurance, you're talking about a lot of money.
Right.
If I were you, I'd probably be thinking about getting a device myself. After you have gone to somebody who has assured you that what you have is Achilles tendonitis, and with the device that I'm telling you about, you can leave it on for, you know, half an hour, a couple, three times a day. And my bet is that within 2 weeks, you'd be seeing a substantial change.
Really?
Yeah. The equipment that I use is a lot more powerful. Mm-hmm. And if I see people say three times a week for a couple of weeks, usually it's gone. And they can do most of their activities.
Now, this is an actual tear.
I understand that, but you see, the light causes healing.
Okay.
The light isn't just an analgesic. It increases circulation. It reduces inflammation. It increases lymphatic drainage. It manages the pain. It stimulates the immune system. It does. It makes more chemical energies for the cell. It does a lot of things that promote the healing process. When NASA did studies on this, what they showed is it sped up the healing process close to 50%. So we're looking at something that's really a powerful tool here. I look at it as the medicine of the future because it's in the quantum physics range of technologies as opposed to the biochemistry. You know, we're doing a study, University of California, San Francisco, now that's a $7 million grant from the National Institutes of Health to treat people who have neuropathies. And it's amazing what it will do. You take somebody who has a diabetic neuropathy,
right,
and they're in horrible pain, and they're at risk for an amputation, and it's burning, searing pain. They can't feel the bottom of their feet. And they're at risk for lots of cuts and infections. Usually, if it's a relatively new neuropathy, like within a year or so, two or three treatments, it's gone.
Mm.
And they take 15 minutes. We've got a machine now that is about $500,000 machine that puts light in very sophisticated ways that makes this work. So the light is powerful stuff, and I hope you can find somebody out there who can deliver it for you.
Let me just before I let you go, now you said you have a machine that's $500,000 machine, and you said I could buy one for a few hundred.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that the few $100 one is going to be anywhere, you know, near as effective?
No chance. That doesn't mean that the $200 one can't help you, because I think it can.
But I think from what you just said, I'm going to see if I can find someone in the area. I'm going to email you. Maybe you can recommend someone in the local area if you know anyone.
I know somebody in Pennsylvania that I could refer you to, so email me and I'll send you the information.
Thank you so much.
John, good to talk to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We're taking your calls, and we have a call from Sandy from Atlanta. Hi, Sandy. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Saputo. How are you guys today?
Fine. So,
and Nurse Jesse, I should have said. Anyway, I called a few months ago after I had fallen and ask you some questions, but now I've had three MRIs and found out I have three fractures.
Ooh.
Then 2 years after I turned 65, I discover that I can have an osteoporosis screening for free with Medicare, but it's 2 years too late because now I have osteoporosis. And
yeah.
Something could have happened, and maybe I wouldn't have fractured, but that's kind of a past thing. Now, the doctors got me on Fosamax, and we chose it because of the side effects only being stomach issues instead of all the other ones.
That's
but I
not
thought
true,
now that
Sandy.
We're,
that's
yeah,
not true.
Now that we're talking about all these horrible medications that I really don't want to take, what would you recommend be the medicine of choice for reversing osteoporosis?
Well, I don't recommend any medicines for osteoporosis, okay? No
okay.
pharmaceutical drugs at all, because I
okay.
think that whole family of drugs called bisphosphonates, of which there are many, there's Boniva and Fosamax and Digronel and a whole family of them, and they
right.
all have lots of side effects that can be very serious. And when taken for a long period of time, that actually puts you at increased risk for certain kinds of fractures, which can be a disaster. And there,
yes,
and it's not
you know,
treating
I've
the
read
cause.
Up on that.
I'm sorry?
I said I had read up on that you can be taking it for osteoporosis and actually get worse osteoporosis.
Well, that's right. And in addition, you can actually get something called osteonecrosis of the jaw. You get atrial fibrillation from it. There are lots of things that these drugs do that make them very, very risky to use. So
right.
what can you do? And here's what I suggest. First,
yes.
you can go to my website, drsabuda.com, put osteoporosis in the search box. And by the way, it's a totally free site. And you can take the health assessment on osteoporosis. It takes 3 minutes, and what will come back are many audios and videos that Vicki and I have made about this topic that will be directly related to the way you answered that health assessment that you take. And what
okay.
it boils down to make it real simple, is that you need to check your vitamin D level. That's an absolute must, because even
okay,
if you're...
Okay, we've done that. Yes, I understand.
What was
well,
your level?
I know how important. Yes.
What was your level?
Well, he didn't say what the level was, but I've been really overdosing. I've been taking 10,000 a day for probably at least a month, and before that I was taking about 6,000 a day, and he
okay.
told me to stop taking it right now,
why?
And then he'll check me again.
Well,
I can go back on it.
Well, I don't know what your level was, but for a lot of people, 5 or 10,000 IUs a day is a reasonable thing to do, taken with meals, because it's a fat-soluble vitamin that you need food in your stomach to be able to absorb. But
right.
it's if you don't have enough vitamin D, you simply can't make bone, and you can't do a lot of other things that vitamin D is responsible for. So I'm not telling you, because I'm not your doctor, what dose to use, but I would aim for a level that's in the range of about 70 or 80 on that test.
Okay.
And normal is somewhere between 30 and 100. So you need the higher side. You also, most of the time, need vitamin K. And if you're on blood thinners, you absolutely can't take it because it reverses the effect of Coumadin and it can cause a disaster. I would say that for those patients who can tolerate it, and that's nearly everybody, it's about 15 milligrams a day. And again, I'm not your doctor, so I cannot give you advice, but you want to discuss that with your doctor.
Now
another
you
thing
said
is
15,
to take
15 milligrams of
vitamin K2. Vitamin
okay,
K2.
Good.
Then
okay.
I would look at taking a little bit of calcium, I'd say in the range of 500 milligrams a day. And I would be looking at some strontium, which is a wonderful mineral that stimulates the osteoblast cell to make and then lay down more new bone, which is what you need, as opposed to the drugs like Fosamax that actually do nothing to stimulate new bone. They actually retard the removal of old bone so that your bone becomes denser and it is protected to some extent from more fractures, but still it's not solving the original problem that you have. So
right.
these natural ways of doing, and of course exercise, and not smoke, and not use alcohol, and not be on any of the drugs that are associated with this, of which there are many drugs that can cause osteoporosis. Even the SSRI antidepressants have been alleged to do that. So you need to go to the website of Dr. Saputo, take the health assessment on osteoporosis, and you will learn all these things at your own leisure, because you can just listen to one video or one audio at a time, and they're all short, and they're not technical, so that you can understand them. So that's
okay.
what I do, Sandy, and I appreciate the call.
Well, how much strontium would you recommend today?
Well, I'm not going to give you a number because I think that's something you should discuss with your doctor.
Aren't there supplements that would have the strontium in it already and
yes,
the calcium?
Yes, but not enough. That's the problem. It needs to be individualized. And if you want to learn all this stuff, it's all very compact and on our site at drsaputo.com. So do that, Sandy, and let us know how it goes.
Okay, let me ask you one more question. The level you said of D I should have, and I'll ask my doctor next Monday when I see him.
I'd say 70 or 80 would be perfect.
70 or 80. Okay, awesome. Thank y'all so much. I will go to your website. I'm powering up my computer now. I can't wait. Thank you.
Great day. Thanks, Andy. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
So how do we keep our minds sharp? You know, aging takes a toll on our brains, and our brains literally shrink as we age, losing up to about 10% of its size. And studies on the effects of aging show that seniors experience declines in many areas of cognitive function. And so I just want to talk about some of the activities that you can incorporate into your life to help to keep your mind sharp and your brain nourished. And one of them is exercise. You know, it's long been understood that the mind and the body are interconnected, and so what benefits the body will benefit the brain. So regular exercise goes a long way to keeping our brain healthy. Another thing is to read a book, because reading is beneficial on many levels. And when you read, not only do you absorb the information that's in the book or whatever you're reading, but just the act of reading itself builds connections within the brain that make it more versatile. And then, of course, eating right. You know, a lot of foods, including nuts and fish and red wine and coconut oil and seasoning with things like curcumin, have been linked to a healthy brain. But concentrating on all-around just a healthy diet may be the best nutritional strategy for keeping our brains sharp. So don't skip breakfast either. And maintain good posture. You know, that sounds like an interesting thought, because maintaining an upright, unslouched posture improves circulation and blood flow to the brain. And then sleep. You know, sleep well. A good night's sleep is really important to a healthy mind, especially our memory. So get enough sleep, and if necessary, take a nap.
There's a thought.
Another thing, paint, draw, or doodle. You know, whether it's a masterpiece or just a little doodle, simply just making a picture is an excellent workout for the brain. And then listening to music. Music affects the brain profoundly, and it's been linked to improved cognition and memory function. And then learning something new. You know, a lot of colleges and senior centers offer engaging, low-cost lectures and classes for older adults. So whether you're learning a new language or you're beefing up your computer skills or having some ongoing education is a surefire way to keep sharp. And then do puzzles. When you challenge and you stimulate yourself intellectually, you're exercising your brain and you're increasing your mental capacity. We often hear about doing crossword puzzles. Those are like a popular choice, but just any puzzles. Puzzles of all kinds can be helpful. And then writing. Writing improves working memory and your ability to communicate. So it matters not whether it's an email to a family or a private journal or a novel, whatever it is, just write. Many people aren't writing much anymore because they're just using the computer. And that's good, too.
Absolutely.
But it's important to note that there are no clinically proven ways to reverse the course of brain diseases like Alzheimer's. But leading an active and social and intellectually stimulated healthy lifestyle contributes to combating normal age-related decline in mental functioning.
See, that's really good that you talk about things like that, Vicki, because Mother Nature is absolutely stunning in her ability to allow you to develop things just by using them. You know, you've heard the saying, use it or lose it. Exactly. And so what happens is, as we age, there's no question we lose certain things, particularly physically. You can't take a 20-year-old person and compare them to a 60 or an 80-year-old person physically. You just can't. When it comes to the brain, you can do an awful lot that will make your brain do better than a 20-year-old's because you still have the ability to make new neurons. There's this thing called neuroplasticity, which means that you can adapt with more brain power, more nerve cells, more interconnections, more synapses that are really important at trying to help the brain work better.
There's even something called brain gym.
Oh, absolutely. That does some other interesting things as well. But even physically, you know, I'm in my later years, my sunset years, they're wonderful, dear, that make a big difference when I'm on a tennis court. For most people my age, they don't have a chance of playing with me because I'm staying fit. I'm playing every day. I have a good attitude about what I do. I make sure that I'm strong, and it makes such a difference in your ability to keep up with some of the younger kids, or younger people who play the sport. So whether it's physical or it's mental or it's emotion or it's spiritual, if you spend more time and you're concentrating on that particular aspect of what you want to develop, you'll do well. I think it's where we put our emphasis that helps us to maintain and be the best that we can be. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
One of the most common complaints of patients visiting their doctors is lack of energy and fatigue.
For sure.
And this can be a side effect, actually, of many medications like antihistamines and blood pressure medicines, antidepressants, tranquilizers, muscle relaxants, day after from taking sleeping pills, and many, many more. But now statins, the biggest selling pharmaceutical drugs on the market, have been found to cause fatigue. So we can add those to the list now.
Isn't that something?
And I was thinking about this. I thought, no wonder there's so many people are tired and going to these coffee houses.
That's probably right.
You know, that's probably why the coffee houses are doing so well, because everybody's tired because they're taking
drugs.
All these drugs.
Well, there's, you know, that's not funny. It's probably got a lot of truth to it. Particularly when you look at the older set of population. The average person over the age of 65 is taking at least four drugs, and you can bet one of them is going to make you tired, at least probably two or three, and maybe all of them.
And maybe the combination of them.
Oh, yeah, bad
idea. And then if you're drinking all that coffee and caffeine, it might be keeping you awake at night.
Or maybe doing things to your health that are counter-affecting it, like cardiac rhythm disturbances or whatever else that coffee can do.
Let's talk about some of the other side effects in statins.
Well, you're looking at things like liver problems. You know, it's contraindicated if you have liver disease. It can cause muscle pains, okay, that come from the actual dissolution of muscle. It can make it necrose, and it's and something called rhabdomyolysis, which means your muscles are disintegrating, will release a chemical called myoglobin, which, if it's in high concentrations, can plug up your kidneys and cause kidney failure.
Doesn't that sound terrible?
Yeah.
And people that at that age that are taking statins are usually probably just thinking that their sore muscles are just from age.
Exactly. And it can be a big deal. And, of course, there's this fatigue. And the other thing that statins do is they block the production of coenzyme Q10. So you're looking at a very, very important chemical or a nutrient that is vital. You can't make energy without it.
Well, they also can cause neuropathy,
uh-huh,
and amnesia,
yeah,
and increase the risk for diabetes.
Yes.
That's terrible.
Well, and everybody's taking it thinking that that's what they need to do because they have a cholesterol level that's high. And, of course, that's the furthest thing from the truth. And there have been plenty of studies that have been shown that this is not a good way to treat people who just have high cholesterol. A high cholesterol is not bad. It's actually, cholesterol is your friend. And what it does is that it helps you make vitamin D. In fact, you can't make it without cholesterol. You can't make many of the hormones in our bodies that we need, particularly the sex hormones. You need it to make neurotransmitters. You need it to make healthy cell walls, cell membranes, so that your cells will work properly. And cholesterol is a good thing. The problem is that when our body's inflamed, then cholesterol becomes damaged and it becomes toxic and it can lodge into the arterial wall and cause these plaques to develop that can eventually obstruct blood flow.
Well, what's important is the ratio, because we also have good cholesterol and we have cholesterol that
not as good, the LDL. And
well, it's the inflamed,
HDL.
It's the inflammation that causes the problem. So what we're doing is we're shooting the messenger. We should be going after the problem, which is what? Inflammation. And what causes inflammation? It's a lifestyle that's not right. You don't eat right. You don't sleep right. You don't get enough exercise, right? There's too much stress, or you're exposed to environmental toxins. They all cause inflammation, and that inflammation is what screws up the rest of what's going on in our body. It's good to have a cholesterol of 250. You know, everybody thinks that's a bad idea. And in general, when we first studied about cholesterol years ago, we noticed that there was an association with people who had high cholesterols or high LDL levels and low HDL levels that predisposed you to heart attacks. Well, that's true. But if you didn't have that inflammation there, you'd have more cholesterol to do the good things it does.
You know, this correlation between the inflammation and the cholesterol reminds me of the Cliff story. Why don't you tell the Cliff story?
It's a beautiful story. You know, John Robbins wrote this in his book, one of his books. It's a beautiful story. There's a cliff in this country called Utopia, okay, where you have this big, beautiful view that you can see that is panoramic, and thousands of people go there every day because it's just the greatest sight that you can see. But the problem is they get so engrossed in the view that they fall off the cliff, and they're diving down, and they're breaking bones, and some of them are dying, and we come, of course, right to the rescue. What do? Put a hospital down there, take care of these people, get the best ambulances, have a research center that looks at bones, and finally what they come up with is this poster that says, we have now, through molecular engineering, created bones that are stronger so that when you fall, you won't break so many of them. And some guy up at the top says, what the hell? Why didn't somebody build a fence up here? And of course, the moral of the story is, well, if we did that, what would happen to all the business?
So we're talking prevention here.
Absolutely. So why not, you know, do the thing that's right to fix the problem, rather than do all these indirect things that don't solve the problem. And that, my friends, is what we do in medicine. There aren't any drugs that cure problems, the cause of what the disease is. They treat the symptoms, and yes, they make us feel better, and yes, sometimes they save our lives, but look at the real data. 400,000 people a year, every year, die because of the effects of pharmaceutical drugs. And many of those effects are from the expected side effects of the drug, not from the misuse of them or some of the thing that's been some kind of mistake. So we've got a system. Yes, we want to keep it. Of course, it does some good things. And yes, it saves lives. But there's a price to pay for it. So why would you want to do something that's aggressive and dangerous when you could take care of yourself with a healthy lifestyle and most of the time solve the problem safely and make you a stronger, healthier human being rather than someone who is just having their symptoms blocked? Because let's face it, the healer is Mother Nature. It's your body. It's you that does the healing. What we do as doctors is we kind of stand by and watch that process happen and try to keep some of the side effects or the symptoms of that particular process from killing you in the meantime. But what we've done is let the horse out of the barn, and then we're trying to corral it, okay, by using frogs to try and corral them back. It's not going to happen.
And sometimes we interfere with the body's normal healing mechanisms.
For sure. For sure. So get smart, you know, take care of yourself, take responsibility for your health, do what you can to protect yourself because you can do a lot. And we're so silly that we believe these dumbass, okay, direct-to-consumer ads and ads we see in billboards and magazines because they're trying to sell you products and they take advantage of the fact that you want something to do it for you. And you're quick to do it because you don't want to suffer. Can't blame you, but you got to keep your brain intact, too. I think we've lost our minds sometimes. Anyway, the lines are open still. The number is 888-874-4888.
Lately, it seems like this topic keeps coming up over and over again about the microbes in our gut. And this week, a couple more articles came out about it, and I think it's important that we keep talking about this because people need to really get it. Now, the microbes in our gut, are affecting our immune system, and we talked about that last week. But now we know that intestinal bacteria may actually trigger autoimmune diseases in people that are genetically susceptible, like with rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes. So I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about what autoimmune diseases are and how this is affected by the microflora in our gut.
Yeah, well, first of all, the microflora in our gut have thousands and thousands of different species of microbes and trillions of microbes there. There are probably 10 microbes for every cell in the body. So we've got an enormous volume of these microbes that live in a complex ecosystem that's a buffer between the outside world and the inside of our body. And what that system does is protect us. It helps us to digest our food. It helps us to absorb it. It keeps the toxins out. It keeps a barrier there, that intestinal wall that doesn't let bad stuff into the body. But if the lining is damaged in some way, which you can do in many different ways, then big molecules can come across that lining, and whole bacteria sometimes can get across that lining, and they invade the body. And on the other side of that lining is two-thirds of our immune system. So close to 70% of every immune cell in the body is right there in the intestinal tract. And if we let whole microbes come across because the permeability is increased, it has a profound effect on the immune system. And then what happens is that the immune system loses its control because it's being bombarded in a way that it can no longer manage what's coming across that surface and presenting itself to the immune system. And it starts making antibodies against things it shouldn't, like your tissues, like your joints to cause rheumatoid arthritis.
That's why it's called autoimmune. It means
self-digestion.
Attacking it on yourself.
That's right. And so what you make are antibodies that destroy your own tissues, and that causes these autoimmune diseases we're talking about. So it's really important to go back and maintain a healthy microflora of the gut. And we do some of the things we do with our diets. You know, we eat too little fiber and too much of other foods. We don't feed the microbes that are the healthy ones that do good work for us down there. And those microbes are very receptive to what kind of nutrients are coming into the digestive tract, which means what you eat has a profound effect on that balance, on that symbiotic relationship that we live with those microbes.
And this is where probiotics come in, because many times they're being destroyed when people are on antibiotics or different medications, even birth control pills and steroids and so forth.
Just about everything. I mean, the number of things that can cause us problems when it comes to this is stunning. The diet, inflammation, infections, poor digestion, stress, antibiotics, toxic exposures, immune dysfunction, all have an effect on the microflora of the gut. And when that's like that, it changes around what it can do and how well it can protect you.
There was even another study that just came out talking about how milk, fat, and desserts can increase the risk of inflammatory bowel disease and appendicitis.
Right. It gets very complicated. If you eat a diet that's low in fiber and high in fat and meat, you know, the medical literature just came out with something like that, thinking it's something brand new. And we've known about this for 50 years. It changes what happens in terms of what kinds of microbes can live in the gut and what they do to our body. For example, if you eat a diet that's high in fat and meat and low in fiber, you have something called putrefactive dysbiosis. Sounds awful.
Sounds disgusting.
And what does it mean? It means that a pathogenic bacteria called Bacteroides tends to grow. It produces a chemical called urease, produces too much ammonia, changes the pH of the gut, and makes us not able to make a product called butyrate. Now, that all sounds like Greek to everybody, but I can tell you, it's very profound. And we can go on with this forever. Go to drsaputo.com. Put understanding irritable bowel syndrome in the search box, and all this stuff will come up in multiple videos. Anyway, We're at the end of our show. I want to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived in DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics that we discussed, go to DrSaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos located on DrSaputo.com under Radio. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe, so if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
And have a great week. Enjoy yourself.
And laugh.